Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After Midnight.
From the outside, the relationship looked ordinary enough. A year and a half together, shared apartments, work schedules that pulled them apart and snapped them back together again. Nothing about it suggested the slow accumulation of dread that would come later, or the question that would eventually sit between them, unspoken but heavy. Is this following him, or is it him? The first sign was physical. Early in their relationship, she noticed the scratches on his back, not the kind you could explain away easily. They were long, angry-looking marks, sometimes deep enough to scab, sometimes shallow but persistent. He told her this had been happening for as long as he could remember. He would wake up with them, no pain during the night, no memory of anything unusual. And the placement made them difficult to dismiss, high on his back, along his shoulders, places that would require contortion or assistance to reach. Some of them healed cleanly, others left scars. He said it casually, the way people do when something has been part of their life long enough to feel normal. He also said something else that stuck with her, that he had always felt a presence around him. Not necessarily hostile, just there, watching, waiting. It wasn't a belief he enjoyed discussing. He told her that whenever he talked about ghosts or spirits, something strange inevitably happened. He said it with the tone of someone describing a superstition they didn't want tested. And yet, he had an example ready. When he was younger, he'd been sitting in a parked car with a friend. The engine was off. They'd been talking for over an hour when the subject of ghosts came up. He grew visibly uncomfortable, asked her to change the subject. As the agitation rose, the motor for the automatic window in the back driver's seat began to hum loudly, out of control, mechanical and sudden. Then it stopped. The car remained off the entire time. At the time, she took these stories in the way people often do early in relationships, filed them away without judgment, not fully believing, not fully dismissing. It was only later, after things started happening around her, that the context shifted. Before him, she had lived in an apartment with friends for months without incident. No strange sounds, no shadows, no sense of unease. That changed after he started staying over. One night, they fell asleep on the couch. She woke suddenly to the feeling of being nudged hard on the shoulder. Three times in quick succession. Half asleep and annoyed, she asked him to stop, and she felt one more nudge, even harder. She turned toward him, ready to snap at him, and saw that he was asleep, deeply, unmoving. There was no one else in the room. They moved in together, not long after. The new apartment was empty and bright when they first arrived, inspected in daylight with the kind of optimism that comes from believing a fresh space means a fresh start. That illusion lasted exactly as long as their first walkthrough. They were moving through the kitchen toward the bathroom and bedroom when both of them froze at the same time. Something darted across the floor ahead of them, a dark shape roughly the size of a large cat. It didn't come from anywhere. It didn't round a corner. It simply appeared, ran, and vanished behind the refrigerator. The movement was so lifelike they both stopped dead. They checked behind the fridge. There was nothing there. No space large enough for an animal. No vents. No openings. Nothing to explain where it had gone or where it had come from. After that, the pattern began to establish itself. He worked out of town most weeks. When he was gone, the apartment felt normal, quiet, still. When he returned, or sometimes the day before, things changed. While he was away one week, her sister stayed over. They were cleaning when she saw a black shadow pass quickly through the hallway in her bathroom mirror. Instinctively, she assumed it was him, home early, and ran into the bedroom to surprise him. No one was there. Her sister hadn't seen or heard anyone come in. He wasn't due back for two more days. And yet, later that night, he did surprise her by coming home early, something he hadn't mentioned or planned. Her sister stayed for several weeks. One night, sleeping on the couch, she was jolted awake by the television, flipping rapidly through channels before shutting itself off. Terrified, she woke her. She brushed it off at the time, insisted the TV was fine, but a few days later, she watched it turn on again after they had both turned it off and left the room. After that, the television never did it again. The incidents never clustered randomly. They aligned with his presence, his arrival, his proximity. Once she went out of town with him for work. It was late, around 1 a.m, on dirt roads in Westport, New York. Dense woods pressed in on either side, broken only by the occasional house. As they unloaded company vehicles, she heard whispers coming from the woods across the road. At first, she dismissed them. Then she heard them again, louder, accompanied by movement. She grabbed him instinctively, asked if he heard it. He hadn't. She bolted for the truck, climbing in through the driver's side because she couldn't bear to walk around it in the dark. He never heard the whispers, but she did. And that was when the thought first surfaced. What if this wasn't attached to the places they lived? What if it was attached to him? The idea stayed with her longer than she wanted to admit. At first, she framed it carefully in her own mind. Stress, coincidence, heightened awareness because of his stories. It was easier to believe that fear sharpened perception than to believe something had crossed from his life into hers. But the longer they lived together, the harder it became to ignore the rhythm of it all. Nothing happened when he was gone. That detail became impossible to dismiss. When he worked out of town, the apartment returned to something close to ordinary. The air felt lighter. Nights passed without interruption. She slept without waking to unexplained sounds or sensations. She didn't feel watched. She didn't see shadows in mirrors or movement at the edges of rooms. And then he would come home. Sometimes the change happened the day before he returned, like a pressure system rolling in ahead of a storm. Other times it was immediate, as if his presence flipped a switch. The apartment would feel charged, restless. Small, strange moments would stack up, not dramatic enough to confront outright, but persistent enough to erode denial. The incident with her child was the moment she stopped trying to explain it away. They were staying at her father's house, sleeping upstairs in an open loft-style space. Her son had his own bed nearby. During the night, she woke to see her boyfriend crouched beside the bed where her son slept, staring intently. She asked him what he was doing. He answered calmly, almost absently, that he was going to the bathroom, then walked downstairs and returned to bed as if nothing unusual had occurred. She thought it strange, but exhaustion pulled her back under. The next morning, she asked him again, this time with clarity, why he had been hunched over, staring at her child. What he said unsettled her. He asked if her sister had come home during the night and climbed into bed with her son. She told him no. Her sister had been gone for days. He looked confused, then disturbed. He had seen the outline of a small body lying beside her son, covered, facing away from him. He had assumed it was her sister, small enough to fit, familiar enough not to alarm him at first. But something had felt off. He described an overwhelming, almost uncontrollable urge to reach out and touch the leg of the figure, to confirm it was real. The only thing that stopped him was the realization that it would be inappropriate if it was her sister. He never touched it. That restraint, that moment of logic cutting through impulse, frightened her more than the vision itself. The urge hadn't come from curiosity. It had come from somewhere deeper, more primitive. After that, she started noticing changes in him. There were moments when his mood shifted abruptly, without obvious cause. He would become irritable, withdrawn, distant. At times, he seemed distracted in a way that felt inward rather than emotional, as if listening to something she couldn't hear. He never spoke about voices, never claimed possession or loss of control. But there were gaps, moments when his reactions didn't quite line up with the situation. The argument on her father's road happened during one of those moments. It was dark, late, and they were walking under a single streetlight at the end of the road. The woods pressed in on either side, familiar enough to be ignored most nights. She heard movement again, sounds that didn't match animals she knew. She tried to tell herself it was nothing. Then she saw her. A woman stepping out of the woods toward the road, toward them. She didn't study the figure, didn't wait to confirm details. Something in her body took over, and she ran, not stopping, until she reached the streetlight. She refused to go back. She called her sister instead, shaking, desperate to leave. He told her to calm down, to keep walking. She wouldn't. When her sister arrived, she left him there. It felt cruel, but fear outweighed guilt. He called shortly after, saying he was walking back. Then she heard him scream. The phone clattered. The connection broke. When he called back, his voice was panicked, begging her to come get him. She found him at the end of the street, shaken and pale. Three deep scratches ran down his face, red and swollen. He hadn't felt them appear, only a sudden burning sensation. He said the phone had felt like it was ripped out of his hands. He didn't remember being touched. The scratches matched the ones on his back. After that, she stopped asking whether something was following him. She started asking whether something was using him. They moved again. A different apartment, a different layout, a different chance at normalcy. But the activity didn't stop. Doors opened in front of them without explanation. Closet knobs turned visibly, slowly, as if manipulated by an unseen hand. The mechanism required effort. There was no draft, no mechanical fault. Sometimes the events felt neutral, other times oppressive. She began seeing shadows herself, once at the foot of her bed, standing still long enough to register before fading. The fear she felt wasn't constant, but it was specific, targeted, as if something was testing boundaries rather than attacking outright. The hardest part was that not everything felt hostile. Some moments felt merely curious, observational, as though whatever was present was adjusting, learning, waiting for the right conditions. That ambiguity was worse than outright terror. It made her hesitate to act, to confront, to demand answers. She wondered whether the scratches were punishment or communication, whether the urges he described were planted, nudged into his mind like suggestions, whether the thing that followed him needed proximity, emotional volatility, or conflict to assert itself. And she wondered quietly whether staying with him meant accepting a life lived in reaction to something neither of them could see. The question lingered between them, unspoken but heavy. Was he the source, or was he the doorway? After the scratches on his face, denial stopped being useful. They tried to talk about it in pieces, never all at once. She learned quickly that asking direct questions only made him withdraw, as if naming the thing too clearly gave it weight. Instead, she listened. She let him tell his stories the way he always had, fragmented, defensive, threaded, with humor that didn't quite land. The scratches, he said, came and went. Some weeks he woke up fine, other weeks he woke up sore, burning, already bracing himself before he even looked in the mirror. What disturbed her wasn't just the marks themselves, but how little urgency they inspired in him. He didn't react the way someone encountering something new would. He didn't scramble for explanations or panic about what it meant. He accepted them the way someone accepts chronic pain, resentfully, but without surprise. It made her wonder how long this had been shaping him, quietly, long before she entered his life. She began to notice the subtler changes as there were moments when he felt distant in a way that wasn't emotional. He was present, responsive, even affectionate, but something about his attention felt divided, as if part of him was always listening elsewhere. When she asked what he was thinking about, he'd pause before answering, as though choosing the safest version of the truth. Sometimes, after arguments, the activity spiked. Doors opened, shadows appeared, the air felt thick and electrical. Other times, the activity followed moments of closeness instead. Quiet evenings, shared routines, nights when they fell asleep easily. That unsettled her most. It suggested the presence wasn't simply feeding on conflict. It suggested access. She started tracking timing without telling him. When he left town, she slept deeply. When he returned, she woke at night. When he was relaxed, the house felt neutral. When he was agitated, things moved. It wasn't perfect. There were exceptions, but the correlation was strong enough to make her stop dismissing it as coincidence. The question shifted. Not is something happening, but what role is he playing in it? The incident with her child replayed in her mind constantly, not because of the figure he saw, but because of the urge he described, the compulsion, the pull to reach out and touch something he wasn't certain was real. It wasn't aggression. It wasn't malice. It was curiosity, sharpened into impulse, that frightened her more than violence would have, because violence would imply opposition, resistance, conflict. Curiosity implied cooperation. She wondered whether the scratches were punishment or restraint, whether whatever lingered around him used pain to remind him where the boundaries were, or whether the scratches were simply the cost of proximity, the physical residue of something that couldn't fully enter the world on its own. They moved again, hoping a new space might break the pattern, and for a while it worked. The new apartment felt clean, untouched, no history clinging to the walls, no corners that felt heavy. Weeks passed without incident. They started to relax. She caught herself forgetting to listen for footsteps, forgetting to scan mirrors. Then one afternoon she heard the closet door. She stood in the hallway and watched as the knob jiggled, turned slowly, and opened. There was no rush to it, no violence, just a deliberate motion, as if demonstrating capability rather than intent. He was home. They didn't speak. They didn't run. They stood together, watching the door settle back into stillness. In that moment, something shifted inside her. The fear didn't spike. It flattened. What replaced it was vigilance, awareness. She realized then that the activity had changed shape again. It no longer needed to shock them. It no longer needed to escalate. It simply needed to remain. That realization forced her to confront the possibility she'd been avoiding. What if he wasn't possessed? What if possession was too crude a framework? What if he wasn't controlled, but inhabited? Not overtaken, not dominated, but accompanied. Something coexisting with him, the way a parasite coexists with a host it can't afford to kill. Something influencing without commanding. Nudging instead of forcing. If that were true, then leaving him wouldn't necessarily end it. And staying with him might not be what kept it active. She considered faith. She considered protection. She considered whether the moments when things quieted were signs of improvement or simply signs that whatever was present was adapting. She noticed that when she asserted herself, when she refused to panic, refused to react, the activity softened. Not stopped, softened. That suggested intelligence. The scratches on his body appeared less frequently after that. Not gone, but reduced. The activity became quieter. Doors opened less often. Shadows retreated faster. The presence didn't disappear. It receded, as if testing how little it could do and still remain acknowledged. Sometimes she wondered whether it was waiting, and not for him, for her. She had changed too. She noticed things now that she never had before. Subtle shifts in atmosphere. The way rooms felt when emotions ran high. The way her body reacted before her mind caught up. Whether that sensitivity had been awakened by proximity or had always been there, dormant until something brushed against it, she didn't know. What she did know was that whatever followed him into her life had altered her relationship with reality permanently. She no longer assumed that what she couldn't see wasn't there, but she also no longer assumed that what was there needed to be confronted. Some things, she learned, became stronger when named. She stopped asking whether he was possessed. The word didn't fit. Possession implied an endpoint, an exorcism, a victory. What they were living with felt older than that, quieter, more patient. They live now in a careful equilibrium. No major incidents, no fresh wounds, no screaming phone calls in the night. But also, no certainty. The possibility lingers in the background like a low hum you only notice when the room goes quiet. She doesn't know whether the activity is tied to him, to her, or to the space they create together. She doesn't know whether something followed him or whether he is simply someone things can follow. What she knows is this. Some people move through the world like open doors, not because they invite what comes through, but because something recognizes the doorway. And once you've seen that door open, even just once, you never stop watching it.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.